My name is Mike Thornton, and this is Full Logic Reverse. On today's program...
He would rather think of himself, and we think of him too, that way, as a soldier, like many of the other soldiers on the inside. But today we have him here with us, struggling on the outside. But we think he is a hero because he never wavered and he never gave up for the struggle, for freedom, for himself and others, for all the oppressed people. Please welcome Geronimo G. Jungle!
Tobacco. Tate. Y'all ain't got to clap. Y'all know, you know, I recognize most, just about everybody out here in the family, so, except for the youngsters. But I just want to say thank you for that beautiful welcoming. And I was so touched just to sit and listen to Jap, Bato, Sundi, up here. My mind flashed back. I got to San Quentin in 72 from after 2 years in the county jail holes, which were the worst holes because there was no sunshine. I thought there was going to be sunshine when I got to state prison, but I was put straight in San Quentin's adjustment center. I think the first time I got there, they put me on the other side in the quiet cells where they had the bodies stacked up. And because of my Vietnam War wounds and the kind of punitive hole they had me in, remember with no toilet and no sink in the back, I did something I never did. I couldn't even do it when I was going through ranger training. I fainted and I went out. And I think it was a boy out of L.A., old tall. He got to hollering to Yogi. And Yogi Panera had never saw me and probably never heard of, you know. And Yogi got to hollering. I'm out. I don't know what's going on. Then Bato, next thing you know, the whole tier was hollering. It was ringing the bells, and I'm gone. And the pigs came, and they put chains all over me. And next thing I know, they were jigging big needles up my arm. I got marks on all of my arm from them calling themselves trying to get blood to try to figure out what was wrong. It was all a farce. But I had been poisoned with some stuff they call Asmodorf. And if it wouldn't have been from that outburst from the brothers on the other side, I probably would have died. It took me to the hospital. I came to, and I lunged at whoever I saw and tried to get their throat and pull it out. And then they beat me down some more. And eventually, they brought me back, and they put me on the other side. And once they put me on the other side, I think I was next to Bato, between Bato and Sundiata. And it was like a rebirth. It was something they did. I didn't think I was going to survive. And the warmth, I wish I knew the language good enough to say the adjective that would describe the feeling of these criminals, quote-unquote, the heart that I felt from these most dangerous criminals that the state of California had. And that's what they were branded as. The San Quentin Six, Rushel McGee, Romaine Chip Fitzgerald from the Black Panther Party, Gig and Earl, Larry Justice and Earl Gibson, and Jeffrey Katari Galdon. That's who was on the tier, if I can recall. And it was in the wake of the uprising with Comrade George, and there was a lot of venom being directed at the brothers. The brothers had already been hogtied and whipped. Some of you may have seen the pictures in the front of the Adjustment Center. Rushel had gone through it twice because he was there in the Marion County Courthouse a year earlier with Little Jonathan and Bill Christmas and McLean. And the first thing that I realized as I began to build my strength back up is that this is a kind of unity that was forged out of so much repression that you wouldn't begin to imagine what those dogs were doing when I got there. Already, to the brothers, it wasn't uncommon for, you would hardly get fed, for them to pass out a sandwich and be full of feces, or them to pass out some Kool-Aid and be full of urine. So you were in the cages, and they would poke at you. They would open the back windows and then put hose pipes on you. It was constant hell. And then at the same time, they were manipulating black against Mexican, against white. And it didn't do too well, even though it did make some dents throughout the years. But it didn't do too well in those holes because of the conscience level that was there. And that's something that we can talk about all night. I had been to UCLA. I had been to Vietnam twice. I thought I had, you know, I'd been through the Black Panther Party experience, the Black Liberation Movement, but now I'm incarcerated, and I'm sitting in the midst of some intellectual giants that would make the average professor with 20 PhDs, you know, sit down and go back to school. They gave me my first classes in physics, and so many other subjects, but I don't want to tell too many wall stories, but I just wanted to let y'all know the flavor, the feeling I had when I saw Vato, Louis Talamantes, and Lil Sunny Alley, like we used to call him, Lil Pug, Easter Box, Lil Willie Tate, and David, we call him Jap. I renamed him Jap. Now, I renamed him Jap because I pride myself on the study of military history. One of the greatest generals that I studied was General Nguyen Van Giap from North Vietnam. And when I met Giap was so proficient. He was so keen in his discussions when we would have on the tier that I would wonder, how did this brother, he's been in prison. I've been out on the streets. We've been studying this, having PE classes and all over the country having shit. This brother here is, And so I began to call him General Jap. And it's caused him a lot of problems later on down the road. But that's, but I still love and respect him. And I looked up to him. I look up to him as a general. The man has a mind, a mentality. You could talk about Jeffrey Garland, who died. Well, Guattari, that's him with Mjumbe. He was what we call a, he was wounded in action. The brother was in a wheelchair. I remember when he had his legs, and he was a hell of a teacher in gladiator schools throughout Tracy and Soledad and all those other places in San Quentin. And the brother says they're very humble, Brother Mjumbe. You see so many soldiers here. I'm just awed, you know, I'm very humble. At the, you know, just to be able to do this, Arthur Lee, in 1969, we opened up a branch of the Black Panther Party in Santa Ana. Shortly thereafter, the Rookie of the Year police were killed. Of course, they go to the Panther Party, they arrest Arthur Lee. He was eventually busted, and he did time for that killing. Arthur is a very He was always a teacher, even in the days back in the 60s with the Panthers, in those outlying areas and places such as Santa Ana, which you know, Orange County and whatnot. And those brothers, I really salute them because back then we had to fight the Minutemen. We had to also fight the John Birch Society. They were very intelligent. We also had to fight the Gusanos. We have a Cuban sister here from Cuba. Jerry, I want to welcome her and tell her to give a sign of our love. Sister, would you stand up? We're so proud to have you here. Thank you. Thank you. Right on. Thank you. And back in those days, we had Gusanos. I know you know what that is. Other people call it anti-Castro Cubans. Thank you. Who would actually be employed by the LAPD and other boss in New York. Afani can tell you. And they would actually kill and shoot Panthers and people in the movement. And So we had to fight against all those forces, and more so in Santa Ana. And I always have the utmost respect for Brother down there, the Ascari. There's so many soldiers here. Darcy Nunn. Darcy, you don't need to applaud. Darcy don't like applause, but I know y'all all know Darcy. And I came out of the hole. Darcy was on the man line. He had gone through the wars of the Hells and Tracy. He just shouldn't have never been in prison, the same as Arthur League and so many others. Struggling always to do things to help prisoners. And he's out here continuing that. And we used to sit in the cells and smoke our little weed and then kick it about the moon and learn how to, you know, these things, you know. You know, we're for the legalization of marijuana. Marijuana should not be it's not a drug. It can be misused as a drug. Marijuana is an herb, and it's very much a part of our history. But I see so many soldiers out here that I really feel honored to be here. Even people say, well, you know, you talked about Barry Lincoln, Sister Gloria, and we were up there. Shockey and my son Eroja and I went up there about 2 weeks ago, I think, because Bato called me, and I had heard vaguely about the case, and Bato clued me in on it. He said, man, they trying to frame the brother up there. So we went up there, and we met with Acorn's wife. Acorn was killed. He was the brother who was killed, and Bear Lincoln was there and appeared and updated, and they ended up charging Bear. The case is going to the jury. Now, Dennis Cunningham and Tony Silver, I hear they've been doing a great job. I mean, these are giants. I mean, I can't say enough to thank everyone. I could give a different speech, but I see people here that's been in the movement along with us all these years, and you applaud me, you applaud Bato, you applaud Sunau, we applaud you back, because without the movement being what it was in the 60s, there would not have been a prison movement the way we know it today. We talk about Attica, we talk about the uprisings, but we know that we have to get it back. We have to support what's going on. We have to support the struggle in the prisons, as crazy as it may seem, because I'm for the elimination for the, we're talking about the withering away of the state. I'm for the abolishing of the prison. I don't think there should be prisons. And there's a very practical way to achieve this, I think. And I think once we put our minds to it, we have some great minds that we can figure our way around this. And we have some strong arms who are ready to die. They're dying in the prisons right now, so the minds get to thinking and give the ideas and the instructions to the body, and they will be carried out. But we need those minds, and don't get to tripping about somebody calling you an armchair revolutionary. We need this kind of intelligence. And we welcome that. Leonard Peltier should never have gone to prison. The brother Gwathi Laws, as we call him, is a great man. He's a very well-loved brother. I knew him personally when we were in the county jail for a minute after the escape. He's with one of our generals, Suni out of Akali. And those brothers need the support, the kind of things that were put together in the 60s to support this kind of efforts. Because as you all know, the prison industrial complex has grown to such great proportions that it requires a great solution. I had to check myself. People have been checking me. I was in other places talking. I have a tendency not to bite my tongue, because I think it's legal for us to do this. It's not only legal internationally, but that is dutiful. We have a duty to do what we have to do. And I think that we are not paying enough attention to international law. Under international law, we have a right, we have a duty to kill police. We have a duty to rob their federally insured banks under international law. We have a right to participate in the armed struggle as long as it's in the furtherance of the insurrection. This is how it's read under international law. International law is supposed to reign supreme over these things. But when it comes to the United States, as you know, with the Bay situation in Nicaragua and the other situations, I think, with the mine, they ignored the World Court. Once they did that, then they show the world that they are the criminal. So now the tide is turning. So we do this very intellectually and very legally, in showing the world, winning the hearts and minds of the people, who the real criminal is and who the real victim is. And we do that, I think, by pushing them. We got to push them. And we're going to die, we're going to go back to prison. But we got to push them. We got to take the ideas that's given to us and we got to put it to practice. We are all old practitioners. That's why you stood by so many people in prison so long. And I see an old friend, Penny. How you doing, Penny? She's done so much, but Colleen. A lot of people say, well, Geronimo, you talk about this, you're the Panthers, and every now and then you mention Vietnam vets. See, a lot of people don't understand, which if you want to know about Vietnam, talk to a Vietnam vet. And Colleen is out here, an old friend of mine, Sneaky White, who helped started the vet group with me in San Quentin. Today is his birthday, and I just wanted to send him a heartfelt happy birthday. He's still in prison. He shouldn't be in prison. The situation with prisoners in relation to Vietnam is as such that I think it would be worthy of your study, because you would get a lot out of it, because a lot of things are not as they seem. And before I leave Colleen, I want to extend on behalf of all of my comrades a great big embrace to Brother Joe Doggery, who's a political prisoner in Ireland, who was in with the power of the Provisional Irish Republican Army. We were very much our comrades, and I had the pleasure of doing time with Joe in New York when I was subpoenaed by Dr. Motula Shakur and Sister Marilyn Buck in 1988. And I met him they always would put me in a hole, and I was looking around the corner, and they had a little space for me to walk, and I noticed the peers were messing with two Puerto Rican brothers, Borinquian brothers, and next thing I know, this white guy coming, he got to getting off and aiding these brothers against the pig. And I turn around, I think Motula was down the tier. I said, Motula, who in the hell is it? He said, man, that's Joe. That's Irish Joe. And so later on, I met him. He is one of the most beautiful. They extradited this brother. Reagan, under his administration, had he and Meese. His case was sound, legally sound, under international law and on all that. Yet and still, they extradited him back to Ireland. And right now, he's in an Irish prison. And I hear from him periodically before I got out. And I hope to go and visit him pretty soon, because I got to go visit my old Irish ancestors. And I got to go to Ireland and see some of my Irish comrades who are very, very supportive of our struggle. And so we go from one, what y'all call ethnic, to the other, because we don't see it like that. We see it as one comrade against a common enemy. And so don't come to us with all of these manipulations and race divisions, because we went through the cauldron of that in those prisons. And that's why I really want to salute the brothers today. Now, they'll tell me, look, G, well, I ain't going to say that, but before we go any further, I want to reiterate what was said about Hugo. We call him Hugo dearly. Yogi Pinnell, his real name was Hugo Anton Pinnell. He's a Nicaraguan brother. And Brother Rochelle McGee. They're still in prison, and so is Romaine Chip Fitzgerald. And I should mention Brother Jarvis Masters, who is on death row, newly on death row now, who's a young student who they framed for the killing of the sergeant on the tier in 1985. And he didn't do it. I mean, he's on death row for a crime he didn't do. But Rochelle McGee and Bill Christmas, they used to take brothers and teach them how to defend themselves in court. This is how Rochelle ended up at the courthouse that day. That's how he ended up there. Bill and all of them, they were helping prisoners. That situation, when I got to AC, I was ignorant to so many things. And the first thing the brothers tell me, Rochelle say, we from Louisiana. Rochelle from Franklinton, and I'm from Morgan City. We're country boys, right? And so Rochelle was telling me, say, well, Geronimo, why are you in the hole? He said, you never been on the main line. You didn't go out there and break any infraction to be put in the hole. And I said, man, I don't know. And Louis, he called me all kind of ignorant now. But it was good. It was good. And he told me, he said, right after Reconstruction, not after Reconstruction, during the start of Reconstruction in 1871, 72, the black people had control of Congress, and they passed a law that made it possible for newly freed slaves to bypass the lower courts, which were largely manned by the Ku Klux Klan, and go straight to the federal courts. And the federal provision was called the USC 42, 1983. It allows you to file a lawsuit that goes straight to federal court. So Rochelle was telling me this. What the hell is this? And he said this was done for the newly freed slave. And throughout the years, it was buried. And it's now being unearthed. It was first unearthed during the Civil Rights Movement. And Rouchet was very well read. So he told me, and he taught me how to file these suits. And that's how I got out of the hole eventually. I filed my own suit at Rouchet McGee's instruction. And after I got out of the hole, and during my process out of the hole, I was able to file numerous other suits for other brothers and help them in the prison condition. We helped put together the prison lawyer's manual, which is one of the most treasured documents in prison today, the jailhouse lawyer's manual. Brian Glick, I think Dennis Cunningham was involved in that back then, and so many others. Susan, I forget the name, but there's so many others who contribute, and especially, and I want people to listen to this real closely, especially Faye Stender. Now, a lot of you youngsters may not never have heard of Faye Stender, but she was such a great champion of prisoner rights through those courts, along with Charles Gary and many others. And she became a victim. She became a victim of one of the coldest COINTELPRO plots that I had ever seen in my life. She was shot and eventually died by what they considered the very people that she was trying to help. These situations are becoming more and more common as the prison population builds. And you should take note of it, because your children and your loved ones, your kinfolks, are the fodder for this. Now, how it goes is that one of them go into prison. First of all, you get tagged. You're going to be this, you're going to be that. If you're not going to be a Crip, you're not going to be a Blood, you're going to be a Black Underground, you're going to be a Mexican Mafia, you're going to be a New Extra Familia. They're going to do some kind of tagging. Then the next thing they're going to take you is a setup, a trial period. This goes on constantly every day. The end result is that what you see on the streets, all kind of senseless murders, all kind of crazy things going on, is generated and encouraged right there in those prisons right now today. One of the things that I wanted to talk about, and I think everybody should listen to this real close, is that they are very adept in creating fictitious organizations. Listen to that real close. You have quite a few organizations that were never started by none of us that people give allegiance to today. And we know that they were started by pigs. But you got people giving allegiance to it. They can't tell you who founded it. They can't tell you who, or what's the bylaws. They can't tell you anything other than I'm this. So in the revelations that came out of the church committee's findings on COINTELPRO was, lo and behold, a whole chapter on creating fictitious organizations. They've been doing this since Marcus Garvey time, probably before. So this is one thing that I wanted to bring to your attention, because it's happening. It's happening all around you. When you hear of organizations, be sure and check them out very thoroughly, and then check them out again. Because this kind of psychological manipulation, they kick back in their chairs and they say they don't have to send any troops in. They don't have to do anything, because they have us kill off each other with the rumors and the gossip and the AIDS and the crank and all, crack, whatever they call it, all of that. And they kick back, and it's a damn shame. We have to educate ourselves to this new form of warfare. Dr. Motula Shakur is very, very good in explaining low-intensity warfare, among other things, in international law. He should be freed. We hope to get him out pretty soon. a giant should have never been put in prison. Brother created a way through acupuncture to get crack users to not want to use crack anymore in New York. He's done so much. We could talk all night about Mutulu. There's so many in those prisons, and since I've been out in my 3 months, I think I've heard from all of them. And they tell me, gee, don't trip. We love you. We know you're going to look out for us. But I still try to mention all of them, man. Like Marilyn Buck, my hero, that woman there. So many lies has been told on that woman. And Asada, we talk about Asada, we talk about Tanya, we talk about so many throughout history. And you have to rank those sisters among the Harriet Tubmans, the Sojourner Truths in our history. And they're doing time right now. They shouldn't be there. They are freedom fighters. They are liberated. Susan Rosenberg. They shouldn't be there. Sister Alia Adrina. Man, from the Borinquen. That means the Puerto Rican, we say Borinquen, but the Puerto Rican struggle is one of the most dear struggles to me. And I know you're not supposed to have favors, and I really don't, because I know we're all in this together, but the things that they have done, and they made it so very clear under international law, should be no doubt that these brothers and sisters are political prisoners and prisoners of war. I mean, it's a damn shame that we don't have that ideological supremacy at 1997 fitting into the new millennium, and we're still around here allowing them to manipulate these things. And what we plan is to continue to approach the United Nations and to bring in more nations. We are gathering more and more support from more and more nations throughout the world. And at some point, we're going to force their hand with the majority of the nations behind us. And so I want you to support that. What's happening in Hawaii? What's happening in Quebec? What's happening all over Bosnia? People want to govern themselves. The Philippines, thank you. That's right. The Huck Gorillas. Thank you. All over. People want to call their own shots. They don't trust nobody coming from another neighborhood, so to speak, because they know what's going to happen. They're going to go back to their neighborhood, and they're going to send their occupying forces in there. They're going to shoot us like they shot that sister in Oakland the other day, like they shot that brother in D.C. I was just at an interview in D.C. today about police brutality. All over the country, in Houston, everywhere, it's genocide. And it's not only against what we call New African Nation. It's against all oppressed people. And once we understand that, and we come together as one force.
Part one of a speech by Geronimo G. Jaga given at the 26th anniversary of the San Quentin and Attica prison rebellions held in San Francisco on September 20th of 1997. My name is Mike Thornton, and this is Full Logic Reverse. I hope you'll tune in for part two of Geronimo G. Jaga's speech given in September of this year at the 26th anniversary of the Attica and San Quentin prison rebellions, next time on Full Logic Reverse.